Hi everyone, welcome to China Money Podcast, your weekly dose of local knowledge on investing in China. I'm Nina Xiang. China Money Podcast is a weekly new media program aimed at international, institutional investors and investment professionals in Asia with an exclusive focus on investments in China. Every week, I talk to a China-based fund manager, an industry expert, an analyst, or an economist. We discuss strategy, industries, opportunities, and challenges. To get our program, you can go to iTunes Store and subscribe to the podcast. This way, our program will be automatically and wirelessly updated on your mobile devices or computers. Or you can go to our website at chinamoneypodcast.com and sign up to our newsletters. Lastly, if you use Facebook or Twitter, like our Facebook page, follow us. This way, you will get our latest updates as well. If you enjoy listening to our podcast and feel like supporting us, how about go to our website and click on our sponsors' banner ads, to Luna and GoToMeeting. Two great companies and services. Go to their website, sign up, and try their new services. It's simple, only take a few minutes, but will be a great help to us. Thank you so much, everyone, for your continued support. Today, I will do a news review all by myself. News from China lately hasn't been that uplifting. Goldman Sachs Gaohua, which is Goldman Sachs' joint venture in China, cut their growth forecast for China's economy to 7.6% from a previous 7.9%. It also cut forecasts for 2013 down to 8% from 8.5%. It cites a number of reasons for this cut, including modest policy easing, upcoming leadership transition, and the uncertainties associated with it, weaker external demand, and also structural challenges. Other banks, including UBS, Barclays, some local Chinese investment banks as well, have similarly cut China's growth rate to around 7.5% from previous level of just about 8%. No question, we hear less debate about whether China will have a hard landing or a soft landing these days. But one thing is for sure, that China's slowdown seems to be a bit more severe than many people have expected. One major reason is that the Chinese government hasn't stimulated the economy as aggressively as people were projecting. During the past couple of months, banks have been predicting multiple cuts of Chinese banks' reserve ratios and interest rates. But the last time China's central bank lowered reserve ratio was in May, and it has only lowered rates twice this year. Of course, it can still happen during the next few months, but any policy stimulus won't be reflected in the economy right away. In addition, a weak U.S. economy and the debt crisis in Europe, the country's export industry has been severely hit. A survey by Reuters shows that August export growth might be as low as 3% year on year. If true, that will be the weakest August since 2009 during the depths of the global financial crisis. Inflation data released last Sunday, or just yesterday, shows that consumer prices are picking up again, with CPI up 2% year on year. So inflation pressure is likely to keep elevated during the rest of the year, hampering any effort by the central bank to loose policy further. So this year might really be the year of paradigm change for China. Just give you a historical perspective. Last time China's economy grew around the level of 7.5% was 13 years ago, in 1999 and 1998, during the Asian financial crisis, when the economy grew 7.6% and 7.8% respectively. Of course, to be sure, China has plenty of financial resources to arrest any undesired further slowdown. During this downturn, China has mostly used fiscal measures to provide piecemeal stimulus to the economy Just last week, China's National Development and Reform Commission approved 21 infrastructure projects, including over 2,000 kilometers of roads, numerous ports and oil pipes. The government certainly has plenty of money to make more of such investments if needed. So, at least right now, no one is seriously concerned about the possibility of the economy growing slower than 7.5%, because it would be unthinkable that the government would allow that embarrassing scenario to happen during a leadership transition year. Xi Jinping is expected to formally become the next generation new leader next March. So this sort of answers the next question that's on everybody's mind right now. When will things start to get better? Probably not until Xi Jinping takes power next spring will we have more clarity of what lies ahead for China. Now, for those who tend to worry about worst-case scenarios, what does worst-case scenario look like for China? Nomura offers some insights. The Japanese bank estimates that there is a 1 in 3 probability that GDP growth will drop to an annual average of 5% or even less before 2014. Just a footnote here, Nomura's base case estimate is for China's real GDP growth to average around 8% from 2012 to 14. So this is really a worst-case scenario. But the 25% chance that China's economy will be growing at 5%, what will that mean for China? 7.5% is conventionally considered the minimum for China to provide enough employment to keep social order. So 5%? That will be really hard for a lot of people to imagine. There is a Chinese idiom, if you ride on a tiger, it is difficult to get off. So for China to get off the wild tiger of super growth, that probably won't be a pretty picture. Next, S&P issued an interesting report about China's metals and mining sector. China is a major driver in commodities demand and is one of the world's largest consumers of commodities. As the world's economy and China's economy slow down, China's own metals and mining sector will likely suffer as well. So S&P predicts that softening demand, falling commodity prices, overcapacity, and high-cost production would negatively impact the whole sector until the end of 2013. But commodities are not commodities. This is really a story of two opposites. For China's steel sector, S&P believes that profit margins will shrink for the next couple of years. Demand for steel is growing at 4 to 6% this year, lower than China's economic growth. And as the property sector cools, it's cutting harshly into steel demand because 50% of China's steel demand comes from the property sector. Also, China's steel industry suffers from chronic overcapacity. S&P's own estimate is that overcapacity level is about 10 to 25%. So together with a slowdown in infrastructure investments, S&P is pretty bearish on steel. And this, of course, also affects finished steel products and iron ore. But for China's oil and gas sector, S&P holds a rather bullish view as increasing demand will continue to support strong profits in oil and gas. Fundamentals for coal is strong as coal usage will continue to dominate overall energy usage. Currently, coal takes about 70% of overall energy usage, and it will decline to 63% by 2015, still well above 50%. So that strong demand will still support a very favorable outlook for coal. For oil, China is already the world's second largest importer of crude oil. and will only import more and more in the future. One thing, its domestic production is growing at 0.3% so far this year, while consumption has raised 5.5%. So the gap between domestically produced oil and consumption demand is widening. So no question, China will have to import more oil in the future. As for gas, BP has estimated that gas consumption in China will grow 7.6% per year until 2030 and will match the demand of the whole European Union. So strong demand for both oil and gas makes the outlook for both commodities very positive. Great, that's today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and hope it's helpful for you. Remember to go to our website, chinamoneypodcast.com, to subscribe to the newsletters and also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. For next podcast, I'm talking to the co-founder of Qiming Ventures, one of the most successful venture capital firms in China. If you have any questions, feel free to send them to us and I will ask him. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Nina Xiang. Until next time.